95 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Positive, and in order to understand positive, sometimes you have to understand the very negative. And the very negative is this one of the phenomena that we don't understand too well, but one that's a very important part of our society and our culture, is punishment, the whole idea of punishment. Roberta and I were looking among statistics and definitions of punishments around the world, and we found some fabulous materials which bring us down to an understanding of ourselves as humans, as people who need punishment, desire punishment, want to give punishment. And I'm not talking about S&M sexuality. I'm not talking about that stuff. I'm talking about the human mind and its need for this. Because if you think about the way most people live, they're punishing themselves. Is there a crime that we committed? Well, we're going to look at all of this, Roberta and I. Sins of our fathers. I remember recently I had a friend who we were kidding around, and I went to a thing called the Universal Life Church, and the Universal Life Church offered to anyone who put their name in it a certificate of absolution. And the absolution will absolve you of all sins, including the original sin, including the sin that was committed by Adam and Eve for violating the Garden of Eden. You could be absolved by just getting the certificate, which was free, by the way, from the Universal Life Church. And if you put in the date, it will give you the exact moment out of which you've been, from which you've been absolved. Isn't that a good thing?
It's a great idea, Armand.
What a great thing. Imagine if
I bet a lot of people signed up for that.
Well, you know, it would be nice to send it to a friend. What if it's true?
Yeah, what
you
if
know,
it
what
is?
If it's true? You're absolved.
What if
so
it is?
So whatever you did, you're absolved.
That's a great deal. I mean, if you think about it, after all this time of being born in sin, that's a great way out of it. You know, as you were describing the need for punishment, I was asking myself, well, why the need for it? But then I thought, think of a little baby, whether it's a human or an animal, who's about to fall into an abyss. And the parent sees that the baby's about to fall and comes around and kind of slaps the baby away from the edge of the abyss. The slap might hurt a little bit, but it hurts a heck of a lot less than falling into that abyss. So I'm thinking that really the first and foremost need for punishment is the avoidance of a bigger punishment, meaning the setting of helpful limits.
Well, there you have something that to someone who doesn't like limits.
Like right? Babies don't.
Like babies don't. Like animals don't.
Right.
Like children don't. Like adolescents don't. Like most adults don't.
Likes limits, let's face it.
Well, some people do.
Yeah, that's what
we're going to talk about the fact that there are certain people who are very comfortable with limitations and with restrictions, and there are other people who just can't stand them. You know, if you're somebody out there who's listening who says, I could never work for anyone else, you're one of the ones I'm talking about. You're one of the ones who are saying, I just can't. I can't be restricted. Because there are many forms of punishment. And let's talk about some of them, the scope of punishment, okay? Now, criminals are punished judiciously, you know, by fines, physical punishment, you know, criminals around the world, sentences such as prison. And then, once you're in the prison, you risk further prisons, further punishment by breaking the internal rules of the prison. So that's one. Now that's one. That's what happens to criminals.
Criminal behavior. Well, I'm thinking of children and children at home and in school that are sometimes punished by their educators or by their caretakers, like I said before, as a way of enforcing limits that are necessary, limits of safety, limits of behavior, limits of social interaction. All of those are things that a child needs to learn, and one of the ways in which educators teach limits is through punishment.
Punishment if you break the rules. Don't slap your sister in the head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't do that. You'll be punished in one way or another. Now, we're not only talking about corporeal punishment, but certainly corporal. Well, you know, there's corporal and corporeal punishment.
There is both, right.
There is both. Corporal means to your body, and corporeal means to your body.
Corporeal, right. Yeah, they both means to your body, yes.
All right, and I was a corporeal in the Army.
Me too.
Okay, now, but according, you know, speaking about physical punishments, slaves, domestics, and other servants used to be punishable by their masters when slavery was legal.
Mm-hmm.
But now, even modern employees can be subject to a contractual form of fine or demotion or other forms of punishment.
Mm-hmm.
You could be demoted, you could be fined, you could be fired. Those are all punishments that we agree to.
Right.
When we work, so even though slaves receive physical punishment, we enslave ourselves by saying, I agree that if I don't follow the rules of the people I work for, you have a right to punish me.
Mm.
Slaves had no choice. We seem to have choice, unless you really have to bring money home to the table. So now, furthermore, there are other organizations.
Well, there are... Whenever you look at a hierarchy, such as what we have in the army or what we have in the police, let's say, or even in the churches or in hospitals where there's a hierarchy of who's in charge, who's the authority, and who obeys to whom and who has to obey to whose orders, wherever you have that kind of system that regulates interactions between people, you will have some form of punishment for transgression of the rules.
And in the Army, you may have a thing like even a court-martial. They will have MPs, you know, who are the military police who go around and pick you up and put you in prison if you're too drunk or something like that, if you violate some rules.
They sure have that in churches, and in the past, a lot more so than they do now.
You know, do they have it in the priesthood? You
yes,
know, I don't, what
absolutely.
Kind of punishment could
oh,
you
well,
get?
Oh, well, you can get all the way to excommunication for heresy. I mean, sure.
I know, but let's say you're a priest in the priesthood.
Well, look at what's happening now. A lot of priests that are being...
Or shame. Shame is one of the...
But they're also being punished by having to pay. And also the worst, I guess, for a priest is to being... Depriested. What's the word?
Defrocked.
defrocked to being
defrocked,
expelled from the order, or for a monk, let's say. In fact, you know what? I have a book at home, Armand, written by Saint Benedict. The book is about punishment that he himself would impart to the monks, the young monks who were coming into the monastery, the
Benedictine.
Yes, the Benedictine. He wrote a codex of what are the rules, you know, how hard do you cane a monk for this kind of misbehavior or that kind of misbehavior, and he himself wrote what's appropriate for what kind of misbehavior. So in the religious setting, we have a lot of this going on.
Well, you know, Roberta, if you think about it, though, let's say you're in one of those orders of the monks where you whip yourself every day. You know, you flog yourself
mm-hmm.
You wear hair shirts to make yourself feel bad, and then you whip yourself every day. Would the punishment for disobedience be that you're not allowed to whip yourself?
I guess that
you know,
would be one
you,
of
you
them.
Have your hands tied.
I guess it all depends on what the... What
punishment is, we tie your hands
what
up.
What normalcy is.
You can bash your head against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't mean to make fun of it because I know religiously there's a lot that goes to being able to push your body to a limit where you reach a religious state that includes a lot of hormonal changes. I'm sure they didn't know about the hormonal changes, but when you get yourself to the endorphin level, you can transcend a lot of stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, so even though I joke about it. Now, punishment can be applied on moral, especially religious grounds. Penance. There's an idea of penitence or penance. Stations of the cross. I'll never forget this. When I was a kid, the boys in Mary Help of Christians High School, which I'm saying for Frankie Googie's sake, who's listening, who is grew up with me in my neighborhood, who went to the same school, but the kids used to hang around the back of the church. And they would hang around the back of the church to find out who was doing the Stations of the Cross. If the girls were doing the Stations of the Cross, then it meant that they were getting the most severe punishment, which meant kneeling around the church 12 times. You know the Stations of the Cross. And since those girls would be the girls who were most likely to do bad things.
Hmm.
And so you just hung out. And that's the kind of punishments the church would give out. And that's the kind of reward it would be for the boys who would...
Interesting.
I know. And in penance, in a theocracy or a religious police, the Islamic State, mm-hmm. Like Iran or under the Taliban, or even, remember, the Inquisition, you know, the punishments
well,
by
the... Well, fortunately, I don't remember it because I was not alive when it was happening, but
you
talk
would,
about
you would
punishment.
Have not done well.
No, I
you,
definitely
you
would have
been
up
witch.
There in the oven or whatever they used.
Yeah, I mean, you would have been, you know where you would have been sunk?
Sunk?
Yeah, the trials for heresy here, you know, when the Salem
Oh,
witch,
in Europe they
in
used
Salem,
to burn them.
But in Salem. In Salem, you would have been gone.
Mm-hmm.
They would
I
have
agree.
Said, Roberta Atti, she helped people by looking at them.
I agree.
Right? She talks to them about things.
You know what I'm thinking? Credit cards. Oh, my God.
That's a form of punishment.
Punishment. Credit card punishment is awful.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I thought credit cards themselves are a form of punishment
well,
for
that
being
too.
Alive.
That, too. That, too, actually. That, too. It's a form of punishment for being alive. For well, I guess for being a consumer. But the way they get you with the increased interest rates and with all of the fees and things, they got it down to a science how to punish people.
You know, they have it. It isn't the punishment. That's not punishment.
What is it?
It's we punish ourselves. And we're going to have
Armand.
To go into that. Yes, you know, I have credit cards. I have never had debt on my credit cards. I will not. I refuse because I know the system that you're talking about.
Mm.
I refuse to ever let them charge me a penny in interest. And when they do, when my check gets there a day late and they charge me interest because it got there a day late, I rebel. And I always get it taken off my bill because I understand that system. But it's, you know what it is? It's punishment of the disorganized.
Right.
It says to you who are disorganized, we want you to have our card. In fact, you who are disorganized, who tend to be disorganized, will get more offers for credit cards,
That's right.
free credit cards, than I would ever get.
Yep.
Nobody wants me to have a credit card because
so
I pay off the bill.
In a way, they reward you for being disorganized because
exactly.
then they can punish you, which is to their advantage. Wow, that is really tricky. But anyway,
let's talk about the times of...
That's
the kinds of punishment, because you do talk about fines, you know, fines.
Well, money, taking away money from people is a punishment that seems to work.
That's one of the worst.
It is, but I guess they keep doing it because it works.
Well,
once you take away money from people, they remember.
Well, let's think about it. You know, you take away money. You know, if you're getting a penalty. If you cheat the government and the government says to you, now you have to pay a penalty, and they give you interest to pay and stuff to pay, it makes sense.
Well, parking ticket, speeding violation, I mean, that's what they do. They take money. That's basically, and then the insurance rates go up, so
it's
that's
all money.
More money. Right.
The other punishment is loss of income. Because part of the way you punish somebody is you take time away from them when they can't earn income. So one of the ways of punishing somebody is they lose their job, they could get fired. Or if you're, you know, I've always noticed this, if you get a parking ticket, It takes a half hour for you to get the ticket. In that time, you're losing time. They are taking time from you, even though you got to stand there, even though that ticket could probably be done in 30 seconds, you know, computerized. You know, you sit there in the car, and you wonder what is – it's happened to me. You wonder what is supposed to happen here. You're taking away my time when I have to be running to New York and helping people out, right? You're taking away my money because I sped too fast. Okay, you deserve that because I probably should have been watching the speedometer closely. You're now taking away – what are you trying to do? Are you trying to shame me? Do you want me to stand by the side of the road and have the other cars pass by? Am I supposed to feel humiliation? Is that part of this speeding ticket ritual? We have to talk about that humiliation thing later, Roberta.
Right.
Okay, but back types of punishment. Confiscation. They take things from you, not just money.
That has actually gotten to a level that's kind of, it worries me, because they take homes from people, they take cars, they take all kinds of things. That's one way of punishing, you know, where you just lose your home, lose your possessions, basically.
I knew a guy who was coming back from Canada. Okay, he was coming back from Canada, and he was taking a, he was in the Students for Democratic something rebellion, and he was rebelling, and he was on some kind of a fight against the government. And so when he was coming back across the border, they stopped him in his car, and they looked at his car, and they pulled out his wallet, and in his wallet, he swears, they planted a marijuana cigarette. And so he was arrested, and this is coming across the border in Vermont. And he was arrested, and his car was confiscated. He had a brand new car, and they confiscated his car, and they eventually let him go. They gave him a $100 fine, but they kept his car, because according to the rules, if anything you're doing illegal is done in a vehicle that crosses state lines, that vehicle can be confiscated. So he had only a $100 fine, but he lost a $5,000 car. $5,000 at the time. Now, of course, cars don't cost that much.
Well, and that was that one little of the things that sparked my interest when I suggested that we might do a show on this topic, Armand, because I was reading that the confiscation of property is really has escalated to the point where you know, it's really gone beyond the limit of what's reasonable. And basically, that's one of the preferred forms of punishment, I guess, in a kind of culture where owning things is one of the things that people like to do. So I think we need to say that depending on the culture and its habits, its likes and dislikes, the punishment is going to take on a different form and a different, you know, way of being administered.
An interesting comment about that, Roberta. You know, and I'll talk about subprime mortgages and what's happening in the real estate market. I'm familiar with it. And the part of what happened is, if a bank lends you money, and they lend you money on a house, and now the houses, you don't pay the money to the bank. The bank says, I'll take your house. Well, that sounds like an okay deal, right? Meanwhile, you don't pay your money. The bank takes your house. You think they've got a bargain. But nowadays, as prices of houses are falling rapidly, the bank doesn't want your house. The last thing they want in the world is to put on their books a losing property. They don't want it. They want you to just, they'll give you, please give me less money, but don't let me take your house. They are begging not to foreclose on people, because it looks bad for them to foreclose, because by the time they get your foreclosed material, it's at a loss. So they are asking people, please don't let me take your property away. And they're making deals. And they're making, they'll make a deal with you. Like, look, give me 50 cents on a dollar and I'll let you keep your house. Other forms of
so
planning.
I guess it backfires sometimes.
And sometimes it works the other way.
Right.
Another one is a restrictive loss of civic and other rights. It's always been a funny thing that if you go to prison, you lose your voting rights.
Oh, man, yeah.
That's stupid.
Although, I mean, I don't have the right to vote, even though I've lived here for 25 years.
But that's because you're Roberta. They took it away from you.
Right. They said, with a name like that, you can't vote.
No, you don't have a right to vote. Why don't
no,
you have a right?
Legal aliens can't vote.
You're a legal alien.
I'm a legal alien.
I didn't
yes.
know you were legal. I knew
have
the
a
other
green
part.
Card. Yes, I have a green
and
card.
You're an alien.
I have the right to work and to pay my taxes, but I do not have right to vote.
Hmm.
Nor can I go into the army. Nor can I own a firearm. So there are a lot of restrictions like that.
What are the restrictions?
Well, actually, those are the only three I know of, but I know that there are more, and that there were people at some point that were trying to have this, you know, changed because apparently it's unconstitutional. But there are a lot of things that are unconstitutional that are more important than us aliens not bearing firearms. I'm not worried about that one too much.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Moriarty. We are talking about punishment and the essence of punishment. We've got some really interesting materials for you around this. We're doing the introduction and talking about the different types of punishments. Restriction or loss of civic and other rights, we just talked about. Demotion. Demotion is a form of punishment. Suspension is a form of punishment. Expulsion. These words, you know, expulsion. You get expelled from school. You get expelled from the Catholic Church.
Yep.
Right? The Catholic Church doesn't like you. They expel you.
Well, in the past, what they used to do is they used to send you off into the desert by yourself. They used to abandon you or disown you. Or I've even heard that sometimes the whole tribe would no longer speak to a member of the tribe, so that he or she was not actually sent out anywhere, but that because of that emotional and verbal abandonment, the person would eventually deteriorate and go into a depression and die. So
that's another form. Well, this is not the Catholic Church.
No.
I was on the Catholic Church. Oh. No, you're right. You're right. And one of the tribal forms of punishment was often you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and right. I'll just say it in
you
in
don't
my
exist.
Family. How do you say it in Italian? When you make that declaration, that means you no longer exist. Was there a way, she's dead to me, he's dead to me?
Mm.
What is he? Dicta mort.
Sei morto.
Sei morto. Mm-hmm. He's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it means you no longer exist. We won't talk to about him. We won't recognize his existence. Excommunication.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to talk about expatriation. I want to talk about expulsion. I mean, I don't want to talk. People know what it is to be expelled from school, right? And then, but in Catholicism, it's a big deal.
Yeah, sure.
Because not only are you kicked out of the church, but wherever your name appears anywhere in the records of the church, it's erased.
Hmm. Now, so you no longer exist.
So you and your family no longer exists.
Hmm.
I mean, it's a big deal. And this happens if you get a divorce. You could have gotten excommunicated for getting a divorce.
Well, not anymore.
Not anymore, but it used to be.
Yeah, until recently, yes.
And then I used to wonder, you know, Roberta, when I was a kid and since I grew up this way, I used to wonder, was there actually some Benedictine monk who was going back on every book that had my family name on it and erasing it with whiteout or with a pencil or something? Oh, Di Mele, boom. Oh, over there, book 90. Book number 732. Oh, there it is again, Dime.
I bet
that.
There was.
I bet
there was a monk whose sole responsibility was to scratch out the names of all the bad people.
White out.
White out
all
right.
the names because you got to leave room for other ones.
Right.
And you take out all the names. And nowadays, you just do a search on your search engine. Catholic Church must have a great search engine. You know, they search up the name and they delete you.
Yep.
So this is another form of punishment.
And then you're no longer in the records of heaven either.
Which brings me on to being spammed. Another form of punishment. Spam. Oh my gosh, Romani. Okay, another, and finally, my friend, so as you could see, there are so many, and we laugh about this because some of them are so cruel. Cruelty and punishment go together.
Actually, in reading the stuff I had to read in order to do this research, really some things made me cry, and they were so sad. That it's horrible sometimes how people abuse their authority to I guess, to, you know, well, I guess because punishment can be used constructively to set limits that are fostering of a better society, or it can be used, of course, coercively to control the behavior and the freedom of others. So depending on which way it goes, you know, it's a tricky thing to administer it in a way that's fair and that is humane and that is considerate and compassionate. So I guess that was the question Armand and I
This becomes a big one, Roberta, because wherever there is punishment being meted out by anyone, it is being meted, M-E-T-E-D, I think. Is it meted?
Meted, which comes from meter, which comes from mater, which comes from matter, which is all the same root, and it means a measure of something. So
sure.
Punishment, it has to be measured.
Measured out. So it's being meted out. Now, wherever punishment is being meted out, there is a person who is the enforcer of the punishment, and they have limits of it. So now you get this. We have a crime, and we have a crime, and there's a policeman. And the policeman, when arresting somebody for committing a crime, has certain limits he's allowed to go to. He is allowed to arrest the person by force. He is allowed to do things. He's allowed a certain limit. Now, he can't go beyond that limit. If he draws his pistol, if he shoots somebody without justification, he is held accountable.
Well, that's in a democratic system.
And that's what we have. If he beats somebody like Rodney King, now, you know, he could get away with that unless there are cameras watching, okay? But in a system, wherever there is punishment, there is somebody who is saying what the limits of the punishment are.
Armand, that's the measure of civilization.
Yeah.
Being able to measure the punishment you mete out is the measure of how civilized you are. Because let's face it, the more dictatorial, the more coercive a government is, the less measured the punishment is.
You know what they do? If you don't have that kind of a system, you have a tribe of gangsters, and you turn over to the gangsters, you say you could do anything you want.
That's right.
And you could do anything you want to those people. You could rape, you could plunder, there is anything you want, anything
right.
you
it's
could
no
burn.
It's no longer meted out. It's,
right?
It's
and there's
just,
no just anything at all.
It's just and then it becomes abuse.
And that's
of
where
power.
The horror is.
Right.
You know, it's such a sad thing. It's such a sad thing that even exists.
But we wanted to make sure that we could separate the two, because one is life-enhancing, the other is destructive.
What do you mean one is life-enhancing?
Well, when a parent lovingly sets limits for a child who's about to burn his hand on the stove,
yes.
That's what it's for. That's constructive. That's helpful. That's life-enhancing. But when a parent, out of frustration, throws the child against the wall, that's destructive. And there's a difference between the two. One is measured. The other one is not measured. It's just an overuse of power and force.
When we get back, we're going to talk about some of the prison things. We're also going to talk about, I just want to fill in, that another way of punishing people is banishment or a restraining order. You know, a restraining order is a form of punishment. You're not allowed to come near me is a form of punishment. Banishment, I banish you, I kick you out, you're not allowed to ever come back.
What about the Scarlet Letter? Remember that movie when you put a red X on the chest of people when they've done something bad? Then
sure.
Everywhere they go, immediately you can spot them. That's something they used to do.
Well, the other thing goes to public humiliation. And public humiliation,
it
often combines social elements with physical punishment. And it's the idea of punishing somebody physically in public,
mm-hmm.
you know, is another form of punishment. Or just public humiliation, which nowadays is the press.
Mm-hmm.
You get discovered for something you did. The worst thing is not getting discovered. The worst thing is the press. Look at that senator who
yes.
got caught in the bathroom. You know, the worst thing was the news
yeah.
about it. And
yeah.
that's the public humiliation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about humiliation, and we're going to talk about shame and the people's need to be punished based on a sense of shame that people carry with them when we get back from our break. We'll be back with you in a little bit, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. Back in a couple of minutes.
the night. I sit alone with a table and a chair, so unhappy there, playing solitaire. All by myself, I get lonely, watching the clock on the shelf. I'd love to rest my head on somebody's shoulder. I hate to grow older all by myself.
Dave Brubeck with Jimmy Rushing, one of the greatest albums you could ever buy. That's Brubeck and Rushing. I recommend it to you strongly, my friends. But it addresses an issue, you know, all by myself. Excommunication, humiliation, public humiliation, imprisonment. So whenever there is a structure of, we've been talking about punishment, wherever there is a punishment that's meted out, there is some judge who says how much you could mete out. So the judge tells the policeman how much he's allowed to mete out, and then the policeman brings him in front of the court, and now there is some rule book that tells the judge how much, let's say somebody is caught stealing something, and you're allowed to give them from 2 to 20 years, but that's all you could give them. You can't give them the death penalty for stealing something. If you do, then there's a higher judge, the Supreme Court, who comes down and says, oh no, that's wrong. So wherever there is, in a civilization, wherever there is punishment, there is somebody who is saying how much punishment is allowed.
And in the past, this used to be the king or the queen, and above that, there was God.
And above that, what they would do is they say they would call God up on the telephone, and God told them what was to be done.
Did they have telephones back then?
Cell phones.
I see.
So the
Yes, there's always someone that says, how much can you mete out?
And there's always somebody who says how much. Now, so when you think about children nowadays, a child who goes to school with a black eye, there is no longer he's allowed to just go to a school with a black eye. There is somebody who says, you cannot do that to your child. Mm-hmm. You can't hit your child. Adolescents have learned the power of this. And many adolescents go threatening their parents, and I have heard many cases of this where they threaten their parents, if you don't give me what I want, I am going to school and telling them that you sexually abused me.
Hmm.
And the power of this to an adult.
Sure.
The power of this, to have this power against an adult. Imagine what a terrifying thing that would be if you have a child who grew up to that point. Well, you know, if you have a child who grew up to the point where they wanted to use sexual harassment or sexual inappropriateness as a thing against you, you probably deserve it. Because what's your kid doing being in that spot anyway?
Hmm.
You probably weren't the best of parents to bring the kid up to a point where they hate you so much that they would humiliate you publicly.
Well, I know, but you know, I have seen pretty bad kids come out of good parents and vice versa. Good kids come out of bad parents.
Maybe you're right.
I don't know, Armand. I've come to the conclusion that it doesn't always work that way, although most of the time it does. But there are times when it's just, where does he come out of, or she? But also, I was thinking, I've heard often enough women who use the threat of, I'm going to tell them you beat me, to a husband, even though he may not have done so.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's a big one, too. But then again, when you weigh the statistics of the horrible statistics of wife abuse, wife beating, versus the few women who use this to manipulate their husbands, well, I mean, you know, I don't know. I think the first one is still much heavier than the second.
And I think, you know,
even in the case of children, like you said,
it's not up to us to determine the good bad of it. I know what you're saying, Roberta. The point of it is to see it and to see the balance of it. There are certain people who hate any form of discipline or any form of punishment and yet seem to be attracted to
it. What
do
you mean they hate it?
Well, I'll give you an example. Personalities. Certain nervous people, people who are nervous. Now, in psychiatry, we call them borderline personalities. Or we might call them manic people.
Mm-hmm.
Or we might call them narcissistic, hyper-narcissistic people. You know, the people who are grandiose, who are out there, who have no limits, and they have a sense of no limits, and the guy who kind of walks by, and if he sees an open door, walks through it, has no sense of limits, none. And will walk in anywhere, not considering what the effect of where he's walking is. So there are men and women who have no sense of boundaries, and I'm going to include in this the psychopath, who is a person who has no shame, the borderline personality, who is a person who has this uncontrollable anger, you know, all of these. Now, these personalities, the one characteristic they all have in common is they hate walls. They hate definitions. In fact, here, even here at the clinic that I run, when you run into somebody with this personality type and you ask them to fill out some papers, just, you know, to ask them questions, they often object to the questions because they're afraid the questions will define them. So if you hate definition and you hate boundaries, you're like, you know, you're like a nervous person who believes that if a fence was put around you, you're going to die because you're restricted. Those people, of course, could never work for anybody in a disciplined environment, you know, where they were had to wear, you know, certain clothing, or they had to appear at a certain hour or punch a clock. They can't, whereas other people can. So there are certain, one of the things that happen is you have a sense of a resistance to any form of discipline. And what happens when you meet a person who is limitless is you tend to want to discipline them. So when a policeman sees somebody walking down the street and that person is yelling and screaming and waving their hands, he goes over to restrict that person's movements. Hey, yeah. You, buddy, quiet down.
Like,
don't
like
do that.
It's like a magnet, yes.
It's like automatically
attracts
discipline.
Sure, because the policeman is the person in charge of maintaining the interactions as peaceful as possible, right?
Yes. And then what happens further is when he won't obey, the policeman has to use punishment. Now, the reason I bring this true to you is because people who are histrionic, nervous, anxious, borderline, tend to get punished more than other people do.
Yes, and they also end up alone. A lot more.
Well, I'm going to get to that part. That's mm-hmm. That's a very important part as well. But we'll start with the punishment.
Right.
The punishments are like you talked about the credit cards. Credit card punishment is for these people.
Yeah.
Right? Punishment is for them to be attracted to somebody. Well, here's a question I'm going to ask you now. Why would someone be attracted to punishment?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's innate in any child, in any baby, even, you know, with animals, to have a need for containment. So, let's start first from there are some people who have an inherent sense of something shameful about themselves, something's wrong with them, and they may not know what it is, they may not know what they've done, but they know that they've done something that deserves punishment.
Wait, can I interrupt you just a second, Roberta? You said two things here. One was very interesting, the first one, and the second one was both interesting, but let me go with the first one. Children like limits on some level. You said children. Now, that means that if I could extrapolate from that, people who like punishment are on some level still children.
Yes, absolutely.
Good point.
Because I think that as we grow up, what we need to learn from the adults around us are the limits whereby, and the limits, I mean the behavioral limits, the social interaction limits, whereby we're going to be able to function within that society that we inhabit and that we belong to. If there is no one there who cares enough to teach us those limits, we don't learn the limits. We feel limitless. And for a child to feel limitless is terrifying, because the child feels very small in the face of a world that's huge with thousands of decisions to be made all the time about things that the child knows nothing about. How do I make all those decisions? I need someone to tell me, and I need someone to stop me from making the wrong decisions that are going to get me in trouble. So the child has a need to be contained, even as the child feels rebellious towards the containment. But in order to set that limit, there needs to be that little bit of rebelliousness so that there's like a negotiation that goes on between the limit and the child's ego that asserts itself up to that limit, but no further. And I believe that when people, and I think this is what you have taught me, Armand, that when people as children did not have that teaching of the limits, Unfortunately, they live life looking for that limit by breaking every limit.
Well, I think it goes two ways. I think you're saying two important things. Number one, if you had too much limitation, let's say you were beaten as a child, right? And you had a father with a heavy hand and he would beat you all the time to discipline you. You may spend the rest of your life rebelling against,
sure,
against discipline. On the other hand, if you had too little or none, you may spend the rest of your life invoking or evoking discipline from people.
But see, Armand, I don't think that a parent who beats a child mercilessly, like what you described before, that's not setting a limit. See, I don't think that teaches the child safety. It teaches the child violence, which is a different kind of
limit.
Well,
okay, that's a whole other radio show.
So I think that even when the parent is heavy-handed, the child does not learn limits because there is, in effect, no setting of helpful limits. It's just beating because the parent is frustrated, basically. And I think that that's why the child does not learn the limits, because beating a child is not setting limits.
You know, Roberta, one of the, I think it was Scott who brought it to my attention. He said one of the most intense sessions he ever had in his life. Oh, it was one of his own. He talked about when he realized that the reason he was being beaten is because his parent wanted to kill him.
Oh, my God.
That the real feeling wasn't not I was bad, not I'm being beaten because my parent has a mistake because I'm bad. I'm being beaten because my parent truly hates me and wants to kill me.
Mm.
A man named Becker wrote a book about this, about the realization for many people that the reason they were so beaten was because the parent really wanted to kill them.
Hmm.
It's a kind of a horrible thought if you think about it.
It is horrible.
You know, and again, it goes to the issue of what we're talking about.
And
so
I
the
think
reasons
that
you're
a parent who does that to a child is a parent who he or she, him or herself has had similar experience,
sure,
most likely.
Other reasons that people would,
sure,
be attracted to discipline.
I think
to punishment.
I think people who can structure themselves and they need a structure in order to function, but they don't know how to create it because they just, maybe they haven't been shown or they just don't know how. Well, punishment is one way that feels like I'm being structured, I'm being given the limits, I'm being, you know, set straight. And so sometimes people can long for it.
So a submissive woman, for example, or a submissive man may be attracted to a dominant woman who tends to talk to him and talk down to him and speak badly to him.
And tell him exactly what to do.
And tell him what to do and call him a turd and he's nothing and he's anything while she's doing it. And all of that, the shame plus the punishment that he receives, fills some part of him and becomes a kind of erotic fantasy love.
Well,
and he calls it love.
I think that the structure of being told what to do is very gratifying. And then there is the issue we talked about, Armand, about identity, where if someone is not certain as to who they are, maybe their ego shifts, you know, maybe I'm this, maybe I'm that, maybe I'm good at this, maybe I'm good at that, maybe I'm not so good at anything, maybe I'm a nothing. Maybe I'm a nothing, right?
And then here comes along a
person who seems powerful, knowledgeable, assertive, secure of themselves and their identity, and says, I know who you are, and I'm going to show it to you by restraining you or confining you or dominating you or telling you what to do or who you are. Well, you know, there is a vicarious sense of identity that the selfless one, and I don't mean selfless in the sense of not selfish, I mean selfless in the sense of lack of identity, that person can feel relief by identifying with the stronger
person.
Well,
you're saying something very important here, that a person will seek out a punisher or a disciplinarian because it gives them identity, and at the same time it gives the punisher, who may not feel like anything, mm-hmm. an identity because they are affecting somebody else. It reminds mm-hmm. me of the Honeymooners. In The Honeymooners, there's this great scene where Alice uh-huh. turns to Ralph. Ralph Cramden is uh-huh. yelling at Alice, and he says, you're nothing, Alice, you're nothing, you're nothing, and I'm the king. And she looks at him, and she says, that makes you the king of nothing.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Well, you know, dominant men are slaves to the people they dominate. Dominant women are slaves to the people they dominate.
You mean because they get their identity
they
through
have
domination?
No, yes, they have no identity that way. So being able to identify yourself, even though it doesn't give you any real characterological definition, but just the fact that you are some form of power, whether you're the receiving end of the power or the giving end of the power, you're part of something. So people who feel like nothing very often will join into the world of extreme sadomasochism. And you know, Roberta, if you look into that world, and I know you and I both have, the people have very little identity.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't. Their identity is this thing they do.
It's the most important thing about them, right?
Other than that, they're very flat characters. Flat.
And they tend to also to want to belong to a group of people that is very dramatic and very kind of controversial, because that gives them an identity as well. But the punishment, if I'm being punished, I exist. If I don't exist, then nothing happens to me. No one even sees me. So if someone notices me, and here we get to the next one that I was going to mention, attention. If someone cares enough about me to want to punish me, it means that they love me.
No, and that goes to the rebellious child. You know, the rebellious child with their parent who defies the defiant one. I defy you. You know what they call defiant personality disorder, which is a new psychiatric diagnosis?
Really?
Defiant personality disorder. We have this new psychiatric which means love me personality disorder.
Yeah.
Because what is a defiant child saying? They're saying, please love me. I don't know any other way of getting it except to get it through opposition.
Yeah.
please love me. The pill they give defiant personality disorder, the psychiatrist, they give them something to take away their defiance. What they should do is give a pill to the parents to increase their love capacity.
Hmm.
Right?
I wish there
give
was
them
such
a love
a pill.
Huh? I think they call it ecstasy.
But then they make it illegal, so.
Of course. Well, you know, which leads us to love.
Right.
Punishment and love.
They go together in
like,
a way.
Yeah, they. It's like
the worst kind of abuse is neglect. If you want to really hurt someone, withdraw your love from them, and that's what people really usually can't stand. Even if they pretend that they don't care, that's my belief.
That's right. It isn't so much what you do to me.
It's what you don't do to
me. It's what you don't do to me. That you pull back, that you don't call me.
Most children would always rather attract punishment than go unnoticed by a parent.
So probably the greatest punishment tool we have is not the whip or the cane, but love itself.
Yes.
Ay vey Ismir.
Yeah.
Which is an Irish expression,
uh-huh.
And it just means, oh no.
Well, that's the ultimate weapon. If you do this, I won't love you anymore. Not only I won't love you anymore, I will not speak to you. I will not look at you. You will not be in my life.
Back to the old morte. Huh?
Yeah, back to the old morte.
Morte. You'll be.
Makes me laugh the way you say. No, I mean, it puts a nice note on it, because it's such heavy stuff, you know?
Anyway, what was the name of that film? Do you remember that film about Italian tradition that I recommended so strongly?
Mm.
spirits. It's going to come back to me. I'll remember it. I'll bring it on to the next radio show.
Household Saints?
Household Saints.
That's a great movie.
You know, my friends, if you're Italian.
That's a great movie.
Get Household Saints. It's listed, Patricia Arquette is in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's listed as a comedy. Do not expect a comedy.
No, it isn't.
No, it is one of the most tragic movies I ever saw, but it's filled with traditions.
It's really well done.
Isn't it beautifully done? It's like one of the most important films I've ever seen. Household Saints. I know it's very available. Hey, you know, so punishment, the biggest form of punishment is withdrawal of love. And, you know, I wonder if, Roberta, the biggest form of punishment since there is prison, you know, the United States has 2,245,189 people in prison at this very moment.
The highest percentage.
The highest percentage and the highest number.
Yeah, I mean, percentage, it's the highest number of people in prison of any other country in the world.
China has half as many. You know, Brazil has...
Even though China has a lot more people.
That's right.
Double people.
Half as many people, maybe because they just shoot them. You know, I keep reading about how they execute people in China. And do you know who has the smallest number of people in prison in the entire world?
I happen to know.
There are fewer people in this country. There is a country, if anybody can guess the name of the country, that has the fewest number of people in the world. And tell me that you thought of it. You don't even have to really think of it, but tell me you thought of it. I will somehow give you a reward if you truly thought of it. Do you think it's Liechtenstein? Liechtenstein, right, which
close.
Is a country. It's close. It has
getting warm,
10 people in prison in Liechtenstein.
Wow, what a place.
You know, and you know there's a place called Nauru, N-A-U-R-U?
No, I didn't know
that. I think it's in Africa, and has 3 people in prison.
I wonder what those 3 people talk about.
Or what they did.
What they did, right?
Right. Well, the worst. The worst is
at the bottom of the list.
At the bottom of the list for number of people in prison, which is the worst prison in the world to be in, is one person.
This poor guy.
Is in San Marino. Where is San Marino? You know,
right next to my hometown, right next to Bologna. San Marino is a tiny little country, as big as Queens. It's much smaller than Queens. It's a country.
Yeah.
It's a country with the government, with everything by itself, separate from Italy, and it has one jail, and in that jail there is one person, all by his little self. What did he do, he or she?
And not only that, but the worst punishment about it is that they're alone in prison.
Right, right. That's what I mean.
I mean, they don't even have anybody that
talk to. I know. No company whatsoever. One person in jail. That's it.
Anyway, this has been a little fun, and it's kind of, there's a lot more to it. I think study of punishment, if you get a little serious about it, you'll see there's some amazing things that you learn about our society from this,
yeah,
and about our
important.
Minds, the human minds. Keep in mind that people who are the most at loose ends tend to be attracted to the people who are the most tight. So the obsessive compulsive people are usually, they find those people with the loose ends. And that's what creates the biggest conflict. I wish we could talk more about it. We can't. We're running out of time. Maybe we'll pick this up next month, Roberta.
Time, right?
This is Armand DeMille. Send me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com. You can look at Roberta's website.
Roberta's, creativehealthsolutions.org and or herpesbegone.com.
Herpesbegone,
yep.
Well, that's that new thing you're doing. Good.
I am.
Good. Okay, we'll be back with you. I'll be back with you, my friends, tomorrow at 1 p.m. Stick with us.
Great music.